Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
People love to focus on things that aren't yet working. And that's good. It's human nature. That kind of divine discontent can be very helpful. But it's incredibly hard to get people to take bold bets. And you need to encourage that. And if you're going to take bold bets, they're going to be experiments. And if they're experiments, you don't know ahead of time whether they're going to work. Experiments are, by their very nature, prone to failure. But big successes, a few big successes, compensate for dozens and dozens of things that didn't work.
G'day, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Talking about Friday Wrap this week, we're not touching news this time, given the fact that we've covered, 50 weeks of news already-ish around that. So today is going to be our last weekly episode for the 2020, quite a milestone this year. And what we want to do is we want to basically, as three of us, three humble gentlemen, just sharing their own 2020 lessons in terms of what they learned out of 2020, not necessarily just property, but in general, what we've seen with asset classes, what we learned out of economy and all that kind of stuff. And we also want to touch on a bit about our predictions and our projections about what 2021 may bring upon us. So, again, it's just three guys, having a chat, having a bit of fun, sharing about each other's lessons and what they learned out of this crazy year, if I may put it. And for our listeners, again, this is definitely not investment advice or anything. Just take it with a grain of salt. If you got something out of it, fantastic. If not, then just move on. I'm sure there's a lot more to be learned for everyone. So anyway, gents, how are we doing?
I am really good, David. What have we learned from 2020? 2020 has been a year stamped in our books. So will be interesting to see what we come up with, the lessons that we have learned, each of us.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. And look, for our listeners, Jazz was absolutely pumped because he didn't have to cover news this week before we jump on. So should see how happy he was in that instance. And John, how are you doing, mate?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to our chat today. As Jazz said, 2020's been strange. I heard, people say weirdest year ever. I'm not sure about ever, 1473, a year I just plucked out of nowhere. I'm sure that was worse, but it's certainly my lifetime. It's been strange. So happy. It'd be great to talk about it and try to, add some wisdom to the conversation.
Yep. Not everyone is that old, John. People are young, right?
Yeah, because I remember 1472.
We don't want to go that far.
John, I didn't know about that. You survived that long. Gosh, you kept a very good secret from everyone, didn't you?
Brush your teeth every day, guys.
Someone's got to manage his properties. He's doing it himself.
Good man. All right. Who'd like to start?
I'll let John start.
All right. So I had a couple of lessons or learnings from 2020, and I'll start with one and then we'll have a chat about it. So the first lesson or learning is that for me was that there is sovereign risk in countries that you never thought had sovereign risk before. Australia, the US, these guys, you used to think about the US as a place you could go to go set up a business and be left alone. And now they're shutting you down. And I don't really want to talk about whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing, but it's not really in the American-Australian inheritance to have your business shut down. And so you combine that with the riots and the election and blah, blah, blah. There's sovereign risk in America now. We never thought of America as a country with sovereign risk. Victoria, Australia, Europe, and so on. And the places that are freest to do business are, Hong Kong, Singapore, and so on. So the lesson for me, I think one of the learnings was that I think there's a reorientation of confidence in the world away from the United States in particular, but West in general. And we're starting to hear about sovereign risk being associated with those old stable countries. What do you guys think?
That's a very interesting one, actually, John, which is, I totally agree with you. I think no one can see at the start of this year, we wouldn't have thought about any of the sovereign risk because, we've seen things going business as usual for such a long period of time that we kind of take it for granted. And then a black swan event like this does happen. Don't know how often they do. Hopefully not too often moving forward. But anything can happen in that regard. And as you said, you know, businesses were forced to shut down. People's livelihood were at risk, basically. Mm-hmm. And it just basically takes up to this point where you need to prepare for everything, like in a worst case scenario, even in the best of times. I think that's one of the main things that that kind of, obviously the COVID lessons got out of me. I don't know, Jazz, what about you? What do you reckon?
I agree with that. What I will say is that relying on in our part of the world, people sometimes rely or are comfortable a lot with governments taking care of the citizens. But I think that's something to be thought of once again, although there were handouts offered and all that stuff. But the businesses that have been impacted, they have been impacted big time. And just the handouts don't help that much. So I think the lessons that I personally learned this year was, one, try and have more than one source of income, to be honest. Have bigger cash buffers in place, especially for the property investors. Times like these where your businesses get shut down and the income from the rents can and have disappeared is risky. Diversify. Property. We are property guys, but I think diversifying is a very important lesson that I have learned this year.
Hence why you've been doing the bit series, basically. Isn't it?
Yeah, you're spot on, actually. That series started before COVID, but I think it was the right time to enter into all the other markets, commodities with the help of John, share market with Denny and all that stuff. And we had some Bitcoin guys as well come on the show. So I think it's been a great year of learning about other investments and asset classes other than property. Property is our game in the town. We all know it, all three of us. We understand finance. But learning all that stuff in 2020 while things were a bit relaxed, let's say it, has been good.
Yeah, I totally agree. I had that as well about multiple sources of income. And the way I kind of think about it is you need to diversify away from your salary. So you need all these sources of income that aren't dependent on your job, which is in the hands of someone else effectively. So I totally agree. Buffers, multiple sources of income, and just to like be prepared because things can pop up.
Yep.
Scary stuff.
And take a turn very, very quickly as well. Just look at how quickly the share market tumbled when, back in around March, April period, right? So that was, obviously that was unexpected for everyone, but multiple sources of income. And also I think this is a great point in terms of my personal experience. I've actually, it's a first year that I dabbled a bit into shares. I think some of the listeners may know that I bought some Tesla shares around March and April period, which is right at the peak of the COVID period. It's been an amazing journey ride since then, of course. But I think the key lessons for me, apart from dabbling into shares, was that I did, when I look back, I said, look, when others are fearful, I was greedy. And so that kind of proved right to a certain extent. I knew that at that point in time, that was a good time to actually get into the share market. Same thing with property as well. You know, a couple of my clients bought properties around the March, April period when there was literally no activity whatsoever. And sellers were really desperate and they were able to negotiate, a lot of terms on the buyer's demand. So that proved the point. Basically, it's a once maybe in the millennial type of event. And, you've got to be, if you're someone who's prepared and you've got that extra buffer fund and, be able to invest and diversify into something, then having a black swan event like this is actually a great time to be able to look into creating that multiple sources of income. and potentially add a bargain level price.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bang. Yeah. I mean, but when I think one of the lessons is that it pays to be a little bit contrarian, and like to, at all times, just to sort of think about where's the herd going. You know, when things go bad, governments don't sit there eating popcorn, watching their people suffer, you know. And I think when people make predictions, so when, you know, the COVID-19 happens, people say, oh, you know, property's going to go down 10 to 15%. And that would be true if no one did anything. It would have happened if no one did anything. But you also have to factor into your assessment and your calculations that they will do something when these sorts of big events happen. So you have to kind of think, okay, we've had a COVID crisis, then what will the reaction to the COVID crisis be? And then what will I do to respond to the reaction of the COVID virus, which is a mouthful. But the reason property didn't go down is because it was all, you know, people intervened, and you need to anticipate that intervention. And that's why, you know, you did really well with your Tesla shares, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that brings me, I remember in the seminar that we did earlier this year as well, you know, you mentioned one thing, which is property is always backed by government. And, you know, this kind of reflects that very well, right? Because, you know, there's no chance that they're going to let the whole property market crashes. As you said, if the government didn't intervene, if they didn't put job keepers and all that kind of stuff in place, and they didn't put the rental moratorium in place as well, then we could be seeing a big bloodbath like what a lot of economists were predicting today, you know, a 15, 20% or even potentially 30%. But because the government has reacted so quickly and they knew that, that, you know, they cannot let this property market crash like that. They just simply cannot let it free fall. So therefore, that's how we're able to rebound it so quickly. So property is strong and robust in that sense, but at the same time, we've also seen the other side of the equation, in which case, you know, you cannot evict tenants anymore. So a lot of the control that you thought you had with property beforehand all of a sudden has been taken away from you, right? And I think, Jazz, you pointed this out earlier to say people may start to have to think about, hey, is property really that safe as what everyone thinks to that degree? Yes, it's safe to a degree, but at the same time, there's a lot of human interventions from the government, from government side of things, which could also impact investor decisions.
Mm-hmm. Spot on. In an event like this, if you are prepared, or if you have the knowledge, and all the other right things in place, then there's heaps of capital to be made. If you know when to pull the trigger and how to pull the trigger, and all of that basically goes back to your knowledge, right? And this podcast is all about that. So, and we are learning as well. We are not we don't know all the asset classes, but certainly we have done pretty well with some of the predictions, which is good. So, and there's lots more to learn for 2021. But what's our predictions, or what are we hoping in 2021? I think that's what everyone will love to know, probably, if we are done with 2020.
I think just before we came on, I think the 2021 will be all about economy and stimulus and vaccine, basically, isn't it? I think that's the free cane topics from before when we jump on. That'll be the main topics that we'll revolve around in that. I mean, personally, I think I obviously don't have the economic background as both of you, so I'll probably cover less, but I'll let you guys talk more about that. In terms of the asset classes, you know, we know that with so much money that's been flooding around the market, and potentially even more stimulus that's coming, given how United States and Europe at the moment are in a bit of a dire straits situation, it's pretty much guaranteed that they will be printing more money. Now, that money is going to have to go somewhere. We're talking about, I think the other day I listened to a podcast that say during the GFC, I think for Australia, how much did they print? Like a couple, like 5 billions or something to that extent. But now we're looking at probably about 10 times at a minimum, 50 or even more, right? And that could be just the start as well, because if the rest of all the printing and RBA are not doing the same thing, then we're risking at basically shooting up our currency, our foreign exchange rate. So Look, I think there will be more stimulus coming, and that's going to inflate our asset classes even further to that degree. So, but by how much, I guess, gents, do you want to have a guess?
I'll let John start on this as well.
Oh, dear.
He loves to make predictions.
John's a pillar.
So real estate, I think, will go up about between 8 to 10%.
8 to
10? In Melbourne, Brisbane, maybe a bit more in Brisbane. And it's probably a little bit more than they're comfortable with, but they'll let that fly. So there'll be no attempt to rein that in. And the stock market will finish the year higher, I think, as well. I mean, I don't know, but I think as well. But here's what I think that we'll see. I think we'll see volatility galore. You know, if you chart, one of the things that I kind of, when I do presentations, I put a chart of real estate prices since like 1970. And it was stable and smooth up until about 2008. And then after 2008, real estate prices started to move around erratically, you know, very sharp increases, very sharp decreases, very sharp increases. You know, it's trending up like it always did, but it's moving around very with great volatility. So my expectation is we're going to see that on steroids. So there could be, like in Q1, another 20% crash in the Dow Jones, but it'll still end the year like 15% higher, something like that. So I think that that's what you'll see. You'll probably see a little bit of that, but probably less so in the real estate market, where you'll see, some markets where the prices really come down, some months where the prices come down, but it'll end the year higher. So zero interest rates creates a lot of volatility, and I think that's a big prediction. So asset prices go higher, but you're going to see mini crashes along the way, and the markets are going to recover from those very quickly. That's kind of where I see that. Actually, just add a footnote. The ECB, and this is not a news podcast, but the ECB last night came and announced a 37% increase in QE.
Wow.
A 37% increase in QE. And, you know, the US dollar took a big crash. So, Dave, you nailed it. There's going to be stimulus galore next year. Stimulus galore.
And I think it's because of that stimulus, right? It's all because of that money, the influx of the amount of money that's available in the capital market that's been circling around. That's why we're seeing this crazy volatility, because when every time, just think of it like the gamble, like, you know, any kind of gambler walk into a casino with such a big bag of cash at the moment, they put it in, it's either win or lose, right? A lot of times. So you were talking about zeros flying around here and there. And that's why, you know, what I think, I mean, it makes logical sense to me why there's such great volatility in that sense, because of the amount of money that's in the market and that's moving around the market as such. That's what's causing this volatility as such. Jazz, what do you reckon?
I think I agree with what John said. One thing I will add to that is we will see more negative interest rates next year. And I think that is going to create some challenges and headwinds for a lot of countries on how they maneuver this MMT policy, which they have been trying for a lot of years now. And on top of that, because of that negative rates, we will see digital currencies like digital yuan, which Chinese have been working on, Fedcoin, join the party to become more commercial next year. I think will be the big theme to be watched. So stimulus, definitely, I totally agree with John and you, David, on that. I think we'll see a lot more money being pumped into the system. Negative interest rates is one, and digital currencies is going to be the big theme for next year, I think.
I think you're 100% right, except I'm not sure about the timing. The digital currencies at the central bank level, it might be a 2023 thing, but if it is, it's still immaterial. But I think you're 100% right. I just don't know if it'll be next year, yeah.
It may be more prominent in one country than the other, but like Chinese may try and go ahead faster than everyone else for obvious reasons. But that's the main things that I can think of. And I agree with John, the property will be somewhere between 5 to 10% next year and much higher the year after.
Yeah, so it'll be after 2022, right? That's when our economy expected to be back in full swing and all the JobKeeper, all the supports coming to an end. Jazz, do you reckon interest rates in Australia were going to go negative?
That's a really good question, David. I don't think they will let it go negative in Australia first. I think if we were to see negative, our leading indicator for that will be New Zealand. So one to watch is New Zealand. And as we see some of the other countries doing it, we will start working on the policies, but I don't think we'll see negative. I think rates are zero now, 0.1 is zero. No point.
Yeah, 0.1, yeah, pretty much zero.
So I think they will stay as is. Reserve Bank will just manipulate the markets in a different way to control the currency, essentially.
John, yeah. What do you reckon?
I don't think they will go negative. I don't think they'll go negative in nominal terms, but I think that that's the aim in real terms. So they'll try to get inflation up. They'll lock interest rates low, and then interest rates minus inflation is the real rates. The real rate will go negative. I think that in a sense they might be waiting for the digital currencies to take interest rates negative. So I don't think you can go negative without a digital currency properly. So I think that that will happen. And Jazz, I really liked what you said about essentially you're saying they're going to pilot these ideas in small advanced countries. So it'll be somewhere like New Zealand or Cyprus or somewhere like that, and they'll pilot it. And it has to be a country with its own currency. So they couldn't do it in Malta because it's part of the euro. They will have to find a place like Cyprus or New Zealand, or Australia might be too big for this sort of thing, but that's how they'll road test these ideas. And I think that's a very interesting idea. I think you're right, but digital currencies are happening and they'll target stimulus through that, but negative interest rates will come only if those digital currencies via central banks happen.
But all in all, from an investor's perspective, what that means is essentially pretty much what we discussed throughout this year, the asset classes that we have touched on, whether it's gold or whether it's silver or whether it's property market, and for the speculators, parts of crypto, I think will shine for the next 2 to 3 years. I think they really will shine for the next 2 years at least. The path is clear for them with what we just said in terms of the bank, central banks printing the currency. If that one statement holds true, then these asset classes are going to grow much faster, basically.
Do you think there's a fear element? I was thinking about gold as well. Gold's it's becoming a very interesting asset because the stimulus is kind of an anti-currency move, and so go, all right, how do I play that? You know, it's Bitcoin, it's gold, it's silver. But there's a fear element to gold. So what happens if, I think the FDA approved the vaccine today. So you've got vaccines, which takes away the fear, and it's the key to normalizing the economy and our interactions. How does gold fit into that? Does gold shrug that off and it just plays as a monetary metal?
So initially gold will maybe see a little bit of pullback just based on that news, because that means the market is very bullish now, which means equities will start to outperform a lot of the other stuff. But I think that will be a temporary shrug off. Gold has maintained its theme of purchasing power, that it keeps the hold of the purchasing power. And if that statement holds true, then central banks, we just said, are going to print more money. And if they are going to, then we are measuring money in gold, not gold in money. So an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold. It's the currency that's fluctuating against it. So if they print more money, that means gold naturally goes up and the dollar index comes down. So long story short, I think gold will keep performing for the next 2 years. just because of central banks' actions.
Yeah.
And silver is silver. Yeah. We have discussed about silver. You know silver more than anyone else out of three of us, but silver is silver. It will just follow gold in terms of its ratios and all. So
yep. So cool. which just back to real estate, which city will be the top performer next year and which will be the worst performer next year? Because we've got, so you know, we said it'll be like positive 5 to 10%. I certainly agree with that. But real estate's not a market. Real estate's a very local business. It's all about the local markets. So which market do you think will do the best? Which market will do the worst? And then where does Sydney and Melbourne sit in there?
David, do you want to start on this one?
Just popping off today. Our world capital cities, I think John, last week we talked about the top performers so far for 2020 has been Adelaide, Brisbane, yeah. Right? Around that, okay. So I think we're seeing a strong rebound right now in Sydney and Melbourne. I think in 2021, Sydney and Melbourne will be back on the top leader charts again, especially Melbourne in particular, given the fact that they've been locked down for so long. And there's a strong rebound at the moment on that. So, and look, you know, you and I are on Sydney, we can clearly feel that there's a fear of missing out factor at the moment in the Sydney grounds. And auction clearance rates being on record high. So I actually think that even though in 2020 they haven't performed as much, but that pent-up demand is going to start to come out and bursting in 2021. So worst performer, I know Darwin. I really don't know that market, to be honest. Yeah. So, but, you know, Sydney and Melbourne, and actually the other one that I think could also be really strong is Canberra. This is one of the smaller markets that we kind of like, everyone kind of keep overlooking, but because of the strong employment, and Canberra hasn't really been impacted much by employment issues at all. You know, most of the public servants, they're on contract, they're on good income, and that's why Canberra, ACT this year has been a strong performer as well. I think it's just been one of those quiet achievers. So that's what I think. John?
I was going to handball it to Jazz. So I think that Sydney and Melbourne might be in the middle. Somewhere in the middle of the pack. And the reason I say that is because they're the deepest, most liquid markets. They tend to have the least amplitude. Mm. But that said, I think that there's going to be I think Melbourne might do a little bit better than Sydney because it's kind of a beach ball being held under the water. Like it's got all this pent up kind of energy to release. So exactly. Melbourne might have a bit of a stronger year. You know, Adelaide was best performing market last year, and it's very tight. I think it's still got one more year to run. So I think that Adelaide will still probably run. It'll probably grind out 10 or 11%, and then it'll go back to the mean of whatever it does over the long periods of time. Mm-hmm. So best performer will probably be Adelaide again, but just for one more year.
Okay.
Worst performer... or it could be Perth as well. Perth could be the other top performer.
Yeah, Perth could be.
And the worst performer, it's tough to say. It could be Sydney or Hobart. And I don't think Sydney will do badly. I think Sydney will do very well. But I think all the cities are going to rise very quickly. So it'll be
just
like,
comparative,
isn't it? Yeah, comparative. Yeah, Sydney or Hobart is the worst. All right, Jazz, and that might
let him do the final reveal.
Are we saying for the next year or for this
2021
that we are in? Okay, 2021, right? So, I think Queensland will do well next year. But if I really don't want to pick 2021. I think we are in we are headed towards a bull market in various asset classes. And the way I look at it is when this bull market ends, which states will be the winner in terms of the property, right?
Mm.
And that bull market won't end in 2021. that will probably end. This run will probably end in 2022 and 2023 start maybe. And if that's the case, I will say is Perth will shine this time. I think Perth will, if you look at the aggregated numbers for 3 years, Perth will outperform all the other ones, in my opinion. Canberra, I agree with David. Canberra will do well as well for very obvious reasons. Melbourne and Sydney will be a bit of laggers maybe next year. They will perform 5 to 7, 10%. But once the COVID clears up, they will be the next in the leg for 2022. But my bet will be on Perth.
Mm. Even with what China's current stance is on on all the
correct.
You still think that Perth is still going to be the top one to shine? So for across 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, not across the 2021. It may not outperform other markets in 2021, but for the run I think Perth will outshine clearly.
It'll be good because they've been they had a downturn for how many years now? I lost track from 2015, I think it was. So
And my reasoning for that is very simple, and we have discussed that on this podcast quite a few times. Is the commodities and the mining resource boom that we'll see that will lead the charge for Perth, and Perth is known for those boom bust cycles. So it may not, that run may not last, or those gains may not sustain basically for a very long period of time, but it will show some decent growth.
So, yeah, I agree. We're at the beginning of a commodity run. I'm not quite sure how long it will go for, but Perth will do what it does. You know,
there's a saying that at $2,000 or $1,500 an ounce, Perth lights up completely. So right now, gold sits at roughly about $2,000 an ounce or $1,800 something. So Perth is going to shine with the gold lights.
Sounds exciting. Nice visual painting for us there.
Yeah. John's eyes just light up, basically. Come on, gold.
I know I'm always a contrarian, and I'm going to be once again a contrarian. I think that's what will end up at.
Can I ask another question, prediction-wise? So if you had to rank these three asset classes from top performer to worst performer, how would you do it? Real estate, stocks, or gold? And before we do that, have I missed a major asset class that we should put in there?
I think that's the big
time.
A very small market. I don't know whether it fits the John's criteria right now or not.
Digital currency is coming. Who knows?
Throw Bitcoin in.
Who knows?
Well, then it becomes very easier. If we look at the last 10 years, then it's Bitcoin. I think so. The order to so, what was your question? What's the order that they will follow? Or
top performers, ranking them. So let's say crypto, gold, real estate, stocks.
So I think crypto will outperform next year. Everything. Silver will be the next in the queue.
So gold and silver, yep, second.
Mm-hmm. So crypto, silver, gold, between real estate and equities, if you remove the big tech companies, real estate and then equities, if you throw back the tech companies, then equities and then real estate.
Okay. So say equities and then real estate.
Mm.
Okay. What do you reckon, David?
I think it will be stocks, equities, and then gold and crypto, probably around the same, similar, if not around the same part, and then property.
Right. Okay. I'm throwing out questions I don't myself know.
Just trying to look for that crystal ball at the moment, yeah. John.
I, I think real estate. So I think equities are more overvalued than real estate.
Mm.
It's more expensive compared to gold, compared to price earnings and all that sort of stuff. So I might say, so I think crypto, precious metals. I'm not even a big believer in crypto, but I think it'll do well. Crypto, precious metals. Then I think between equities and real estate, I'd say equities and then real estate. I think that's the same as you, Jazz.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So we agree on next year's run.
Oh.
I think we all think that property is going to be the last runner out of 2021, just because, I mean, yeah, because of the nature that it's just slow, right? Like slow in terms of reactions and so it's not as volatile. And whereas, you know, when there's a good news, obviously what we're seeing now, equity market's gone very bullish, gold market follows next, and crypto, bang. So,
That said, you know, what would I rather own? I'd rather own real estate, and 2020 proved that. Like, that's what I want to own, because there I get leverage, and there I get bailouts, and I get, you know, like real estate's, it's, you know, that's what I want to own. That's what the banks love, so that's what I love.
I think it comes back to a bit of diversification. I agree with you. You know, like, yes, owning real estate is fantastic, but at the same time, you know, you want to look at multiple sources of income, right? So if someone's already got the real estate leg pretty solid, like, you know, we all got established portfolios as such, that's why it would be good to be able to look at into something different in other asset classes like gold and, you know, crypto and potentially equities as well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But you got to write it out. That's the only thing. I think a lot of investors, when they look at investing in these other asset classes, they hold a different mindset, especially when it comes to equities. They think it's more of a trading. It's more of a trading mindset, whereas you can't use the trading mindset in property. So maybe one of the tips that I could give to my listeners is that, you know, I haven't sold any Tesla shares at the moment because I'm holding that view, despite the fact I could have cashed out and, you know, taken what, maybe 500 times profit. But I look at it like it's a, if I look at it like an investment class, I go, I'm going to hold it out long term. And if I don't have to sell, then I don't sell. Then that mindset will allow you to basically ride it out, the ups and downs, because it doesn't really matter what the value is. You know that you picked it in. You know you're in the market. You've got a skin in the game, just like property. It's not until when you go, right, I actually want to be able to take that cash out, want to take a bit of profit, that's when you look at the value. And then I think most of the investors would be fairly surprised or very happy after 2 to 3 years of a good run.
I think you hit the nail on head, David. It's with the equities or the crypto, anything that's liquid, even gold, it's hard to hold on to the profits. Whereas in real estate, it's a little hard to transact, or it's not that easy to liquidate, basically, is what I mean.
Correct.
So yes. I think that's the big challenge for the investors, for property investors. I mean, equity guys, they know their game. But for property investors, it becomes a little bit of a challenge, something that we force ourselves to learn, basically.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think when you get into these asset classes, I think you have to have a view of what, like a slightly longer term view. You see, if you buy gold, for example, I think gold's going to get to $8,000 in the next decade. So I don't really care what it does day to day. I don't even care what it does year to year, because I think eventually that's what it'll do. When I look at real estate, I think real estate will double every 10 years, give or take a couple of percent. I don't know which 10 years. So I want to own it, and I don't care. So I can ride out 2018 because I don't care. 2018 was a brutal year. We're totally recovered from there. So, I don't care about 2018. You've got to have a big view, and that's the own, and you've got to be patient. Know what you're buying, understand what you're buying, and relax.
It's easier said than done, though. I have to say, you know, I'm sure most people are like, oh yeah, what would be the price today? And they have that tendency. Just like, I remember, I think when I was a newbie investor back in the days, I would try to check, has my property value gone up? Whereas now I kind of don't care. Like, as long as the rent's coming in, it's covering the mortgage, happy days. I'm not selling it. So yeah, but it's an interesting mindset. I just thought could be worth sharing with our listeners, you know, to extent.
Any other sort of curveballs for next year? Any kind of weird and wonderful predictions about?
I think the vaccine is not going to be 100% effective, and as we know that COVID is going to continue to evolve. So, I think because of that uncertainty and because of the potential mutation that COVID could go into, the market is going to be extremely volatile, as you said. There are going to be some really happy days with great investor confidence, and there'll be some really unhappy or really, really red days on those days, which, there's some negative news, you know. And it's all going to be, to a degree, controlled by media to a certain extent. So, I guess brace yourself, investors, for another rocky ride of 2021. That's what I feel.
I'm with David on that one. I was about to say the same thing. It's the vaccine where we'll see the news come out, you know, where it's 95% effective, and then it will be, no, it's HIV positive or something. All that stuff up until at least mid of next year, which means the immigration numbers and all will be impacted still until the vaccine comes out, the rollout and all. But I think that's the thing to watch next year, that will keep the markets a little bit more volatile.
Yeah. I agree with those. I mean, for me, I think that the wild card for next year is going to be something related to the fallout of the election. Could go either way. Don't know. I mean, I think we can say Biden will probably win, but I don't know what the fallout will be. And if I were to guess, I think that there'll be a lot of chatter about big tech and censorship. And I think there'll be topics for next year loosely related to the election that was quite acrimonious.
Interesting.
And the privacy and all that stuff, isn't it?
So, that sort of stuff.
People's privacy. Yep. Okay. All right. Well, I think that's... is anything else, gents? No?
No.
Jess, would you like to do the honour of doing our last wrap-up for 2020, mate?
All right, gents. It's been a year. We really enjoyed these weekly wrap-ups. And we love when we get good feedback from you guys about it. And we plan to keep pushing the podcast harder, improve on a lot of other stuff, bring a lot of other asset classes next year. We'll probably be off for at least a month. We'll probably publish our first episode towards the end of Jan. It's Christmas time. It's New Year. It's been a year. Enjoy. Party hard. Gents, do you guys want to add anything?
John?
Oh, just have fun and spend time with your family and don't sweat the small things. You know, make sure you're connected to good people. That's the main thing.
Yeah. True. I think everyone, it's been a tough year for 2020. I think everyone agrees on that. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs, both emotionally and I guess for people financially as well. Take this time to recover, be restful for 2021, spend some time, quality time with your families. For those of us who couldn't travel overseas or travel to other states, you can still travel locally. But I think it's a great time to celebrate what you have done, what we have achieved this year. We literally came out from the other side of the tunnel at this point, just through a pandemic, the shortest pandemic ever, I should say, as well. Give yourself a bit of pat on the back. We've gone through another, we've witnessed another historical moment. So I think that's probably what we should say, a historical year that we've gone through firsthand. And I'm sure everyone's got some lessons out of it. Take time to digest them, think about review and think about your strategies for 2021, how that's going to impact you. And we'll look forward to basically come back again with another 2021. Exciting 2021.
Yep. And stay safe. We will see you guys in 2021. John, Jazz, and David.